She's an assistant professor in the Center for Health Policy and Inequalities Research at Duke University, and she'll be presenting on... Okay, you talk about it.
And she'll be presenting on Depression as a Barrier to Appropriate HIV Care Among HIV-Positive Women of Color, and I'll be presenting findings from the Guide to Healing Project. And I have nothing to disclose. So, as has been discussed already, and many of you already know, women of color are disproportionately affected by the HIV epidemic in the United States, and that is particularly true in the U.S. South. Women of color are at increased risk of infection, mortality, and certainly at risk of being lost to care. Therefore, the Guide to Healing Project seeks to enhance the entry, retention, and engagement of HIV-positive women of color into care, and we do this at the University of North Carolina Infectious Disease Clinic in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. A little bit of background on depression and HIV, some of which we've already heard about. Lifetime risk estimates for major depression among women range from 20 to 26%, yet among HIV-positive women, it's up to 37%. These women are at increased risk of depression. Further, trauma and psychological abuse, which we've also heard some about, is also prevalent, especially among HIV-positive individuals. I've given the results of one study here that shows among women, 68% reported sexual assault after age 15, and 34% of HIV-positive women reported childhood physical abuse. We know that women who are depressed are less likely to engage in appropriate HIV care and adhere to treatment, and we know the consequences of failing to engage in care and adhere to treatment are dire. In this analysis, we explore the correlates of depression, including childhood trauma, ongoing partner psychological abuse and sociodemographic characteristics, and just offer a gentle beginning to exploring possible associations with HIV medication adherence. This is North Carolina. And this very bright map shows you the catchment area, or the counties in North Carolina from which the UNC ID clinic draws patients. You can see that most of the patients are drawn from the counties that are in bright red, which is right around the UNC clinic, but we draw from all over the state. As of 2009, there were 380 women of color who attended the UNC Infectious Disease Clinic, and these 380 women of color represented 81% of all the women who were at the UNC ID clinic. Of the 380 women of color, 84% of them were African American. The women obtained HIV either through intravenous drug use, 11% of African Americans and 1% of Hispanics, or via heterosexual transmission, which was 81% of African Americans and 87% Hispanic. And that's the clinic. In the Guide to Healing Project, these are some of the methods that we use to collect the data. Guide to Healing is a clinic-wide intervention, and so it's we needed a robust evaluation design in order to evaluate the overall intervention. And we're using an interrupted time series evaluation design, which consists of weekly cross-sectional interviews of HIV-positive women of color. And on average, we talk to about 7 women per week. Baseline data were collected from 189 unique interviews between April 2010 and February 2011. And in order to participate in these interviews, women needed to be at least 18 years of age, able to communicate in English, and be present in the clinic on that day for an appointment with their provider. We used validated instruments to collect the data, including the PHQ-9 to collect depression. We used the WHO trauma questionnaire for trauma, both childhood and adult trauma. We used the Index of Psychological Abuse to get partner psychological abuse. And then we collected a bunch of sociodemographics. I provided here some sample questions so you can see the kinds of things that we're asking women. I noted other presenters had included their alphas, and I didn't, and I can't pull them up in my brain for anything. So I will suffice it to say these are validated questionnaires, and we have a lot of confidence in them. In any case, the PHQ-9, which we use to collect depression, has the question stem, thinking about the past 2 weeks, how often have you been bothered by the following problems? And then women can respond on a from a four-point scale, ranging from not at all to nearly every day. And example questions include little interest or pleasure in doing things, poor appetite or overeating. The WHO trauma questionnaire asks questions to which women respond with never, once, or more than once. And some sample questions include, have you ever been held up or threatened with a weapon? And as a child, were you sexually abused? And they define sexually abused as touched in a sexual way, made you touch them, or forced you to have sexual intercourse. The Index of Psychological Abuse has the question stem, how often has your partner? And women can respond with never, rarely, sometimes, often. And so it would be, how often has your partner accused you of having or wanting other sexual relationships, or lied to you, or deliberately misled you? These questions were read to participants, and the responses were recorded into netbooks. In order to analyze these data, I use linear regression models, which generated beta coefficients and 95% confidence intervals for the abuse-related, trauma-related, and sociodemographic correlates of depression. I constructed models predicting depression as a function of childhood abuse, adult abuse, and partner psychological abuse, and we have both unadjusted and adjusted models. And the adjusted models were adjusted for housing, employment, insurance, age, and education, which I will show you how they look here. You can see that the age distribution is roughly, I'm going to start with the education distribution. No, I'm going to orient you to the slide. On the y-axis, please note the percents. Across the x-axis, you will see the various sociodemographic categories that I'm going to describe for you. On the far left-hand side, we have the education categories, which are greater than 12 years of education, 12 years of education, or less than 12 years of education. And you can see that the women are roughly equally distributed across those three categories. In terms of age, this is a slightly older population. The women are, roughly equally distributed across less than or equal to 39 years of age, 40 to 49, or 50 and older. Most of our women live in permanent housing, and a large percentage of them are not employed. This is the distribution of the trauma and depression scales, and you can see the average value for the PHQ-9 was 7.11, and I've provided the standard deviation and the observed range. And I understand that the trauma may not be particularly meaningful unless you're familiar with those, but suffice it to say that these women have experienced significant amounts of trauma. Another way that the PHQ-9 is often analyzed is by using these established cut points. It's interesting to note, I think, that 18.2% of our women report would be rated as having no depression. They have a value of zero, and 17, 27, 35% approximately, or just over 30%, have moderate or higher form values of depression. I think on the PHQ-9, a 10 and above, it denotes meaningful depression, and so that's approximately 30% of our women. So we ran both Spearman and Pearson correlation coefficients. I have the Spearman correlation coefficients presented here. I was surprised to see that the correlation between trauma and depression was actually as low as it was. Adult trauma and child trauma at 0.8, got that, makes sense. But to find that depression and childhood trauma or adult trauma was only 0.3, I say only, I realize that's a meaningful correlation, but it's certainly not as high as I had expected. All right, you're now going to see a bunch of results slides that look a lot like this. So I'll take a minute and tell you that on the y-axis, I've plotted beta coefficients and 95% confidence intervals. And across the x-axis, we have the different categories of trauma. And these models are predicting depression or predicting the continuous PHQ-9 score. And for this particular slide, each of these forms of trauma have been entered singly. This is not a model that includes all three. It's each of these were entered separately into the model. And what we see in these unadjusted findings is that child trauma and adult trauma and partner psychological abuse are all independently associated with depression among these women. It is adjusted, okay. When we adjust the models for the individual level sociodemographics that I described a few minutes ago, we see that the picture is remarkably similar. Child trauma, adult trauma, and partner psychological abuse are all significantly associated with trauma, even after adjustment. Now, in these pictures, what I'm showing you is our models that contain child trauma and, well, excuse me, they contain partner psychological abuse and child trauma, or partner psychological abuse and adult trauma, both entered into the same model. And these are the unadjusted associations. And what you see is that when child trauma and ongoing partner psychological abuse are entered simultaneously, they both remain statistically significant. The same is true for adult trauma and psychological abuse. In the adjusted models, the scale has changed. The zero, which denotes statistical significance, the line of significance, is no longer my lowest line because the child trauma, the model containing child trauma and partner psychological abuse is no longer statistically significant. But in the model with both child trauma and partner abuse, or partner psychological abuse is still associated with depression. In the models with adult trauma and partner psychological abuse, both remain associated with depression after adjustment. So these are baseline data. We're pretty early in the project, and we don't have a lot of adherence data yet, and we certainly don't have the chart abstraction data, the viral load, the CD4 counts that we would like to use to be thinking about medication and care adherence. So this was the best that I could do, given these baseline data, to look at the relationship between adherence and depression. So the question here is, how often do you feel you have difficulty taking your HIV medications? And patients could respond with never, rarely, most of the time, all of the time. The values here for the mean that I've provided, those are the mean values on the PHQ-9. So what you see is that the women who respond that they never have difficulties have lower PHQ-9 scores than the women who indicate that most of the time or all of the time. Again, this is a pretty squishy introduction to adherence, but it's suggestive, and it's certainly work that we're going to be continuing in the weeks and years to come. So, the review. Most women reported some level of depression symptoms, with over 30% reporting moderate or severe depression. We found childhood trauma and adult trauma and partner psychological abuse were also reported by these women of color. All three types of trauma were statistically significantly associated with depression, all by themselves, and in adjusted models with multiple predictors, partner psychological abuse and childhood trauma remain statistically significantly associated with depression. Lastly, in this preliminary analysis, depression appeared associated with self-reported adherence difficulty among these women. Limitations. This first one is a biggie, right? We're only able to interview the women who show up in the clinic. The women who don't show up may very well be so depressed that they can't make it to the clinic. So we're only able to ask the women who are actively in care, and that's an important limitation, and if anybody has any ideas as to how to overcome that particular limitation, they should let us know. This is cross-sectional data collection. We've collected a retrospective exposure, and we're collecting our exposure and our outcome data all at the same time. I'm talking about women of color, but really in the U.S. South, at UNC, what I'm talking about are non-Hispanic black women. We don't have very much information on Hispanic women, and so for me to call this women of color is a bit of a misnomer, and we have no comparison group for these analyses. Despite these limitations, I feel like this study has significant strengths. We interviewed a large number of women at baseline. 189 is almost half of all the women of color at UNC ID clinic. We used validated and nationally comparable instruments. And we observed important heterogeneity, both in terms of education and age and even years since diagnosis. And lastly, the study design, the interrupted time series, the multiple measures that we take on most of the women will allow us to assess longitudinal change. It's not something that's going to make this particular analysis any better, but it's hopeful for the future. future directions, there are many. Obviously, we need to examine these psychosocial variables in with viral load suppression, and the actual hard measures of treatment adherence. It will be important to explore these associations with other social and mental health constructs, for instance, anxiety and social support and coping style. We also need to examine these associations with health behaviors. You know, are the women who are non-adherent and or depressed more likely to be engaging actively in substance abuse or harmful sexual behaviors? And lastly, we need to model the temporal sequencing of trauma, depression, and adherence, and we'll be doing that using marginal structural models or structural equation modeling. Last, please let me acknowledge the funders, in particular HRSA, for the support, and UNC CFAR, sorry Bird, UNC CFAR for this research. We appreciate the staff both at Duke and at UNC, and we would like to thank the participants who are courageous and generous in sharing their stories and their responses. And last, I would like to acknowledge the PI on the project and co-author, Dr. Bird Quinlivan, who's sitting in the audience today. And I neglected to mention the other two authors on this particular presentation, Heather Parnell and Katia Roitbird. So I thank them as well. Thank you.